Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into a really charged issue, the Skin of Blackness doctrine.
Right, the so-called Lamanite curse in the Book of Mormon.
And we have a powerful stack of sources here. They detail not just the original teaching, but this really vigorous modern effort to change what it means.
Because the teaching itself is, and I'm quoting from our sources here, horrendous, vile, so racist.
Yeah.
And our goal today isn't really to relitigate the history of it. I mean, that speaks for itself.
Here.
We're analyzing the current apologetic playbook. Specifically, we're looking at professional paid apologists like Neil and Jasmine Rapley.
For Book of Mormon Central and Scripture Central.
Exactly. And they are actively trying to redefine this curse. Their whole argument is that Skin of Blackness never meant actual physical skin color.
So what did it mean then?
Well, they're arguing it meant things like symbolic paint or tattoos or maybe even dark animal furs.
Okay, so we're going to test those claims.
Right against the scripture itself and the historical context in these sources.
And before we jump into the theories, we have to talk about the money trail.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the funding context here is just, it's crucial to understanding what's going on.
It really is. These groups, like Book of Mormon Central, they're often presented as, you know, independent academic groups.
But the sources show something very different.
Very different. The sources confirm these are what the church calls arm's length nonprofits.
The arm's length.
They are heavily funded by wealthy Mormons, and more importantly, they get money through the More Good Foundation.
And the More Good Foundation gets its money. Where?
Directly from the LDS Church. It's right there in the church's own 990 filings.
So the church is essentially buying plausible deniability.
That's the strategy. They fund the research, they fund the arguments, but if things get too controversial...
Or if one theory contradicts another, which we're about to see...
Then the institution can just say, oh, that's just Neil and Jasmine's personal interpretation.
Instead of actually having to apologize or endorse anything formally.
It's a very sophisticated corporate strategy. It's all about member retention. You give people these plausible explanations to neutralize the most damaging history.
Like literal institutional racism.
Exactly. And you do it without the leadership ever having to formally own any of it. It's an intentional strategy to keep things ambiguous.
Okay, so let's unpack these four theories. These are the main claims the apologists are putting out there to, you know, reinterpret this curse and get it away from physical skin color.
And we need to see if the Book of Mormon text actually supports any of them.
Or if they have to kind of dance around the key verses to make their arguments work.
Let's start with the first one, which is maybe the simplest. It tries to fix the language itself.
Okay.
The idea that skins just meant animal skins, you know, garments.
Like Adam and Eve's coats of skins.
Precisely. It would frame the whole Lamanite curse as just a cultural marker or a symbol of their status.
That sounds, I mean, on the surface, that sounds plausible. The word skin can mean animal hide, and it's definitely less problematic.
A lot less problematic.
But what happens when you drill down into the actual text, where the Lamanites are described?
Well, that's where the theory falls apart. The text makes a distinction that directly undermines it.
How so?
If you look at Alma chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, the scripture is very specific. First, it mentions their clothing.
Right.
It says the Lamanites had a skin which was girded about their loins. That's clearly a garment.
A loincloth, basically.
Yes. But then in the very next breath, it separately describes the curse. It says, and the skins of the Lamanites were dark, according to the mark.
So two different things.
Two different things. And the footnote on the word skins in that verse, it directs you right back to 2 Nephi 5.21.
The original cursing verse.
The original one. So the church's own cross references are confirming that the dark skins are the result of the physical curse, not the result of a coat they're wearing.
The text itself separates them, the clothing and then the actual skin.
Exactly. The text requires a physical interpretation there. It just does.
Okay, so that leads us to theory two. This one tries to fix the text after the fact.
Yeah.
The famous pure and delightsome edit.
Yes. This is a big one for apologists. We have Jasmine Rapley arguing that Joseph Smith changed white and delightsome to pure and delightsome back in the 1840s.
And the reason was?
To make it crystal clear, in her words, that the curse was always about spiritual purity, not physical color.
But wait a second. If the goal was to be crystal clear and get the racial language out of there, why wasn't that change applied everywhere? Consistently.
That is the critical question. And it wasn't. The sources show verses like 1 Nephi 13.15 talking about people being white and exceedingly fair and beautiful, were just left untouched.
And what about the most important verse of all?
The most important one, 2 Nephi 5.21, the verse that actually describes the Lamanites being cursed.
It still says white, doesn't it?
It still says white today.
Yeah.
It describes the Nephites as white and exceedingly fair and delightsome.
That seems like a massive oversight. I mean, if you're the prophet trying to make things crystal clear, and you miss the Genesis verse for the entire doctrine,
right?
Doesn't that suggest the edit was either shockingly incompetent, or maybe they wanted to keep the color description right there in the foundational text?
It creates a huge gap in their logic.
Yeah.
And you can see the leadership today still trying to move away from it.
Like in 2013.
Exactly. The 2013 change to the chapter heading into Nephi. They removed the phrase about receiving a skin of blackness.
But they didn't change the verse itself.
They didn't. They're trying to remove the label without actually fixing the doctrine.
Which brings us right to theory three, paint and pigments.
Right. So this argument is that the Lamanites painted their skins dark.
Citing Maya practices sometimes.
Yes. Linking this dark paint or soot to filthiness, which could then be, you know, symbolically washed off at baptism.
Okay, but this one hits a few roadblocks pretty fast, doesn't it?
Immediately. First, there's the geographical problem. Joseph Smith's setting for the Book of Mormon wasn't Mesoamerica. That's a later idea. So the cultural comparison doesn't work for the original audience.
But the bigger issue is the text itself.
The bigger problem is structural. It completely contradicts the genealogical part of the curse.
Ah, the genetics problem. Paint isn't hereditary.
Precisely. Alma chapter 3, verses 7 to 9, is all about the curse being passed down through mingling his seed.
You can't pass paint down through your DNA?
You can't. If the blackness was just a cultural choice, something you paint on, it couldn't be inherited from one generation to the next. The text is committed to a physical inherited trait.
And there's a great counterargument right in the same chapter.
Yeah.
The Amlicites.
Yes.
They rebelled, and they physically marked themselves with red on their foreheads.
To distinguish themselves from the Nephites.
Right. So if the Lamanite darkness was just black paint you could wash off, why would the Amlicites need a new, different mark? They could have just used black paint and blended right in.
It's a powerful internal contradiction in the text. The Amlicites have a voluntary, temporary mark. The Lamanite darkness was inherited and couldn't just be washed off.
Which brings us to the last one, theory four, tattoos.
This is where it gets really strained. The claim is that the word mark could mean tattooing, based on a Hebrew word in Leviticus.
And the idea is that if they just stopped tattooing their kids, future generations would lack the mark and become fair again.
Yes, that's the argument. And they point to the conversion story in 3 Nephi.
But to make that work, they have to misquote the scripture.
They have to. The key verse is 3 Nephi 2.15:16. And that verse says that when they converted, both the adults, the parents, and their children became exceeding fair.
And tattoos don't just disappear when an adult gets baptized.
They do not. I mean, we're being asked to believe in some sort of divine laser tattoo removal for the adults instantly. And that their children, who maybe weren't tattooed yet, somehow immediately started showing a fair skin color that just bypassed the whole genealogical curse. It just ignores the foundation of the doctrine all over again.
So after going through all four of these attempts, what's the common thread?
The common thread is a conscious effort to ignore the most central, consistent parts of the doctrine.
The genealogy.
The genealogical passing of seed, the physical and inheritable change, and the explicit purpose of the curse.
Which was, let's be blunt, racist.
It was explicitly to prevent the Lamanites from being enticing to the Nephites. That's from 2 Nephi 5.21. The whole point was to enforce racial separation.
So when these four textual arguments fail, where do apologists go next?
They're forced into a final retreat, the last bastion. They'll claim the darkness must be purely symbolic.
Of what?
Spiritual destruction or death. And their reasoning for this is so telling. They argue that skin color naturally does not change this quickly.
The it's not natural argument. But in a book that's all about an omnipotent God doing miracles, isn't that a strange argument to make?
It completely contradicts the entire narrative of the Book of Mormon.
Right.
If God is all powerful, the limits of nature are irrelevant. He can change skin color. This is a book full of biological miracles that defy natural law.
Like Ammon chopping off arms.
And then the wounds are healed. Or Laban's decapitation where there's no messy bleeding. If God can control blood flow or reattach limbs, changing skin pigmentation seems like a pretty minor miracle in comparison.
So the argument that skin color can't change quickly isn't a theological one.
Not at all. It's a modern attempt to rationalize away a miracle that now makes people really, really uncomfortable.
And this physical interpretation wasn't some fringe idea. This was mainstream.
For centuries. Even prophets in the mid-20th century took it very seriously. Spencer W. Kimball, for instance.
Future president of the church.
Yes. He believed in this physical change. Your sources detail his notes on Native American students in the Indian Student Placement Program. He said they looked brighter, whiter than their families back on the reservation.
Wow. He truly believed these kids were physically changing color.
Because they were assimilating into, essentially, modern Nephite culture.
Mm-hmm.
It shows just how physical, not symbolic, this doctrine was for almost 200 years.
It's jarring.
It is. And it raises the question, why are all these convoluted theories needed if the original text is so plain, even believing LDS scholars admit it?
Like Grant Hardy.
Right. Grant Hardy, in the Oxford Annotated Book of Mormon, he comments on 2 Nephi 5.21. He says that while some modern readers want to interpret the darkness as symbolic,
it contradicts the text.
He says it appears to contradict the plain meaning of the text. It's an explicit admission from a faithful scholar that the literal reading is, in fact, physical and about race.
And this all leads to this incredible contradiction we see in the church's marketing today.
Oh, this is fascinating.
The sources had a church video with a black convert who was questioning the racism in the book.
And he finds comfort in 2 Nephi 26.33, which says, God denieth none that come unto him black and white, bond and free.
So what's the problem?
The linguistic hypocrisy is just breathtaking.
Okay.
When it serves a modern marketing goal to show inclusion, black and white means literal black and white people, total equality.
But just two chapters earlier.
Skin of blackness has to be symbolic. It has to mean paint or tattoos or animal skins. They are using two entirely different dictionaries for the same book, depending on the PR goal of the moment.
They want the verse to mean literal equality for the marketing video.
Yes.
But they demand a symbolic meaning for skin of blackness just a few pages before, to avoid admitting to the literal racism.
They cannot have it both ways. And even that verse, 2 Nephi 26.33, isn't about modern equality in its own context.
What is it about?
The Book of Mormon's own narrative says God doesn't deny black people salvation. He just turns them white when they convert. That's what happens in 3 Nephi. The curse is removed.
So it tracks with this historical context.
Perfectly. Think of Jane Manning James, the black pioneer sealed to Joseph Smith as a celestial servant. Her patriarchal blessing promised she would become white in the afterlife. The doctrine was about salvation within a racial hierarchy where dark skin had to be physically reversed.
So here we are. We've reached the core dilemma for you, the listener. Do you follow these apologists who are paid by the church and offer multiple contradictory theories that require you to ignore key verses?
Or do you follow the clear, unambiguous, and yes, racist historical teachings of the prophets and the plain meaning of the text itself?
It seems the church leaders are intentionally letting this ambiguity fester.
Oh, it's intentional. By funding these apologists, they're successfully muddying the waters. It gives members excuses. It's all about retention.
So you can choose the belief that makes you feel the most comfortable.
Exactly. If you're a modern progressive member, you choose the symbolic view. If you hold the older, more literal views, you can cling to what the prophets taught. The ambiguity is the feature, not the bug.
It's the integrity of the text versus the comfort of a modern interpretation. But we should leave you with a final thought, one that ties us all back to the very top.
Jeffrey R. Holland, a senior apostle, he recently said that the Spirit will not reveal anything that's contrary to what the prophets have taught.
Okay.
Well, if that's true, and the official position for 200 years from multiple prophets has been literal skin color, shouldn't that be the only position the Spirit confirms today?
It's a powerful question.
So why are current leaders hiding behind paid academics? Why are they letting these contradictory theories circulate instead of just clarifying the doctrine directly from God?
The lack of a clear answer from a living prophet and this reliance on funded contradictory theories, it almost feels like an admission.
It's an admission that they can't get a revelation to fix this. The only way forward with any integrity is to accept the documented racism in their foundational text and its history, rather than paying people to keep explaining it away. Something for you to mull on this week.